Hi, everybody. My name is Josh Nason. This is Josh Nason's Punch Out here on WrestlingObserver.com. Welcome back. Happy December. Your interview series continues on with a stop in June. That's right. We are halfway home, friends. Can you believe it? Just like that. And just like that, we head back to June with returning guest, Miss Kate Elizabeth of Fightful, returning for at least her third trip around the year interview series run over the past few years. And what a month to talk about, because we lead off talking about WWE Night of Champions and the CM Punk show. Yes, Mr. Punk returned to Saudi Arabia, and there was a lot of chatter about that, as you might expect. The apology, the match itself, Triple H saying he's incredibly proud of his boy, CM Punk, for apologizing. So we talk about that. Of course, R-Truth, you remember that whole thing? Let go, big push to get him back, came back. Was a heel, and, well, we talked about what happened after that. And, of course, we had some AEW All In looming in the distance. Grand Slam Mexico, big success for the company. We chat about that. And, of course, the best in NXTNA, as I'm combining all those three. Japan, the junk drawer, kind of the best of everything else happened in the world of wrestling. Hundreds and hundreds of headlines scanned through by yours truly for this distilled episode. So please enjoy it. June. Kate Elizabeth, Josh Nason. Let's go. Josh Nason's Punch Out starts right about now. We're back once again with the edition of the Wrestling Year Interview Show, if I can say the words. I get so excited, especially my guests that I have at this time. Returning champion for, I believe, year three, I think, could be four, but at least three. Kate Elizabeth of Fightful, returning as we look at the month of June 2025. And we were just talking before that she's a veteran at this. She knows all the ins and outs. All the little things, she knows this, and we're glad to have her back. Kate, welcome back. Glad to have you.
Thank you so much. Three-time year-in-review champ, Kate here.
That's right. That's right. I guess I say trophies or something like that, right? Some sort of some patch or something like that put on a jacket.
Everyone's got their year-end awards. Like, that's all I want. I just want a little patch for a sweatshirt or a jacket or something.
Yeah.
That says like three-timer.
That's right. Just like Saturday Night Live, they do that for the five-timers club. I got to figure something out for that. Right? I've been talking about that for a while. Yeah.
We all get robes.
Yeah, that's right. My non-existent production budget just goes through the roof, and I have to have a line item for that in the home budget, something like that. Well, welcome back again. And for those that have not listened to this before, I'd be surprised if you're jumping in June. But if you are, that's great. Certainly go back to all the different episodes that we've done so far. This is a 12-part series, go through every single month. And I say painstaking detail, but there's no pain involved. It's only pleasure when you're going through all these things and all things we talked about. We thought I said this in previous shows, all things that throughout the year, we thought this is the biggest thing ever, or this isn't going to mean anything. And all of a sudden we're like, now it's like what the kids say, a nothing burger, something like that. Now you just, you know what I mean? Nothing happens. So we go through every single month, a deep dive in a different month and a different guest. And lucky you pulled June, pretty good month.
I did. I was looking through this and there is a lot of meat on the bone. And this is also one that's so interesting to look at now in December. Like, I think it has both there's a lot here that was monumental and then a lot of stuff that in hindsight looks different in December. So I'm looking forward to diving into this month.
Good stuff. All right. Well, we'll kick off with WWE this month because, if anyone heard, they headed over to Saudi Arabia. Dun, dun, dun. Like they always do. However, they brought someone new along, that being CM Punk for the first time. Of course, people remember he was a very anti-Saudi Arabia as a lead up to the show and all the articles and things like that got brought up and past interviews and so on and so forth. And of course, he kicked things off right for Night of Champions at the pre-show, kind of the pep rally, so to speak, for a lack of a better phrase, where he apologized to quote unquote all of Saudi Arabia for his past mean tweet. He was confronting, in a sense, a fan who a lot of people thought was a planted fan, and who was just demanding he apologize. And he did that and made amends. I think that was going to happen one way or another, but certainly it was a good way to do that and really kick off his new run and really kind of just come full circle on this whole thing. He competed against John Cena on this show, lost in his bid to win the WWE Undisputed title, the world title. I'm not sure which one that's called. Triple H afterwards saying he's incredibly proud of CM Punk for apologizing to Saudi Arabia. And of course, the results of the show, other results, Cody Rhodes winning the men's King of the Ring, or the King of the Ring, rather, I guess it is the men's, Jade Cargill winning the Queen of the Ring. And we going into this, if you remember, I completely forgot about this, that there was this big Middle East issues and all these things going on at this time. And so production employees, there was a lot of talk going into this, that this show is still going to happen. Is WWE going to send their people over there? And I think all of us kind of knew, no matter what, they're going to send those people on that plane to go do this. Some staffers that went there early, of course, setup and production, all that, they were delayed in Qatar due to an airspace closure there. So yeah, it was all that leading into it. There's an Intercontinental title match supposed to be on the show, Dominic Mysterio against AJ Styles. That had to be pulled due to an injury due to Dominic Mysterio. Sami Zayn versus Karrion Kross was added. And on the show, also Solo Sikoa winning the United States title. And Hikuleo made his debut after what seems like 3 years behind the scenes at NXT. We just didn't know it exist. He evaporated into vapor. What happened? But yeah, this was a happening with all the lead up to this, and then the execution of it, the Punk quotes after. This was a whole thing.
This was well said. This was a whole thing, and I think, there's a lot of hindsight now too with Punk going over there. I think at the time, a lot of people, and maybe self included, were very reactionary, and I think there's a lot of very valid criticism. But when now you see that they're doing Royal Rumble over there, they're doing WrestleMania over there, this kind of felt like inevitable because you're not going to do those events without CM Punk. I think there's a very important distinction that gets lost in this conversation sometimes of the Saudi Arabian people versus the Saudi Arabian government. And I think if there was a situation where WWE ran a show over there without taking a ton of money from the Saudi government, like way less people would have an issue with it. And I'm one of them because I feel like if your name is CM Punk, you kind of have to revoke your Punk card if you are taking money from of I'll say oppressive at best regime, right? That is a whole his name is a tribute to a genre of music that was born out of resisting oppressive government. So I think with how outspoken he was, that did a number on a lot of fans. I think the other kind of subplot with this was like, you're really going to do CM Punk versus John Cena for the last time, not on American soil, especially when they had these other dates in Chicago and all these things. And also, like, the Thugonomics thing of it all, I thought was so corny. Like,
Oh,
that was super, super, super polarizing. Some people loved it, other people hated it. I don't know anybody that was like, yeah, it was fine, or that was fun. Like, it was very polarizing. I thought it was terrible. I thought it came across really, really cheesy. So, I'm someone that feels like a lot of the criticism of CM Punk is warranted in that way. Sitting here now in December and looking back on it, it's like, well, if they're running WrestleMania and Royal Rumble over there, you're just not gonna do those events without your top stars. So people that feel like he's a sellout, I think that's a fair criticism. I don't think it's unfair to say like people aren't allowed to change and grow and evolve and their views aren't allowed to change with them as they mature and stuff. So I don't think there's a right or wrong to that, and I can see both sides of the coin, but considering how staunchly anti these shows he was, and I'm guessing it has nothing to do with the Saudi Arabian people as much as the government. It was a real 180 on it, and I think because of the inevitability of what was coming with Royal Rumble and WrestleMania going over there, this was probably like ripping off that Band-Aid because they're obviously pursuing these mass scale events that aren't glorified house shows, right? So, I also thought it was just the corniest way to go about business. I thought we're gonna talk about it in a minute here, but the John Cena pipe bomb promo I thought was so cool, and then the CM Punk of Thugonomics thing I thought was,
Yeah.
and I've loved Punk on the mic, especially when he has some edge to him, but man, some of those lines were like my dad asked ChatGPT to write them or something, you know what I mean? So the creative substance and all of the context that creative substance was in was definitely at the very least to say a hot topic, and I think for fans was a lot for them to kind of wrap their heads around, quite frankly.
Yeah, well put. We also had this story that happened throughout the month. Seemed like a huge thing at the time. And of course, now it just, everything is like it was. So R-Truth was revealed to be departing WWE. His contract was not renewed. And there was this all these WWE talents taking to social media to just pledge their love and their loyalty to him and just, how much they loved him and all these things. And it just seemed like, okay, at the onset, it's like, okay, it seems like a natural progression. Just they weren't doing a lot with him, comedy character, all that. Someone that could be around forever, but might not be around forever. You can kind of see either way. And then there's this whole buzz of, is he going to hit free agency? There was Indies reportedly interested, and perhaps TNA, perhaps AEW, will never know. But then it was some news came out that perhaps that wasn't going to be the case, and lo and behold, R-Truth returned later that month at Money in the Bank to lay out John Cena. He was fully clad and masked and all that, except his pants weren't fully down, so you could see a little bit of an ankle. And it's just like, that's an African American gentleman, and huh, this seems that there would be a great spot to, guess what? Psh, there he is, and he's R-Truth, a little bit more serious. Afterward, of course, this was the whole story of, was this a work or was this not? Triple H was asked about at the Might have been the last post-event press conference he did, saying it's all part of the show, man. That type of thing. R-Truth saying afterwards the departure was not a work. That was a big thing. People say, oh, it had to be. And he's saying it wasn't. A report came out that Nick Khan had taken over in contract discussions, and then he was going to essentially go back to his real name, Ron Killings, saying the truth has set me free, and I'm Ron Killings going to a heel character. Of course, this happened in June, as we sit here in on December 2nd. He's right back to where he was before. Nothing had changed, and it's they did a little bit with the heel thing. They just never committed to it, and they did it to satiate fans. And this whole thing is going to happen again because I don't think he's going to be in WWE for life. And when his next deal runs out, good for him. He got a couple more years of money, but I think there was a potentially kind of bigger thing out there for him, and he just never went after it, and now he's back in the same position. And yeah, when his deal runs out again, that's it.
Yeah, what's so disappointing is I think there was so much in WWE for him too, and they just never followed through on it, to your point. Like, the is it a work, is it a shoot discussion, I think is also WWE has done the work shoot injury with Seth Rollins, right? So like they've been more proactive about muddying those waters a little bit. They've been very vocally discrediting wrestling media at a time where a giant scandal was hanging over their head. I don't think that's coincidence. That's certainly something that I think about where I work. But this there's so many kind of interesting facets about this. One, like R-Truth was in talks with other promotions. If you're working, you're probably still going to do that. But from my understanding, they got like pretty advanced. And I don't think talent goes online to say not a work if they're trying to keep the mystery alive in a sense. Like keep that buzz going, right? Let people wonder. So that was all very interesting. I have a background in publicity, so I could go on several tangents about the inability of figureheads in multiple wrestling companies to navigate pressers very well. But I don't believe it was all a part of the show. But to your point about the heel turn itself, like it was such a special moment in time and such a well-delivered promo. And it's actually to me, a pattern of this issue that WWE has of these impactful moments and not following through on them. The New Day heel turn, it's a year to the day, I think, of when we're recording this. They won the titles, but Raw doesn't really have much of a tag division right now, so nothing there. I'm sure you had some fun talking about the John Cena heel turn and the
Of
way that
course.
went.
Yep.
So I think there's it's symptomatic of this bigger issue, but to me, the bummer of it is that kind of feels like a bait and switch to the guy that Ron Killings is. Because I'll tell you what, I did SummerSlam pressers, and he was playing both sides of the fence. Like, if you asked him something as R-Truth, he responded as R-Truth. If you asked him something as Ron Killings, he'd respond a little more serious. And I was like, oh, this is very interesting. But it feels like they kind of copied and pasted that character and gave it to Bayley and didn't want to replicate it in a way. So it to me, it's very, very disappointing because I think there's so many things you could do with Ron Killings as a more serious character. There are people that could certainly use the support of a faction led by that guy, and that would kind of minimize the bumps he's taking at this age. So I think they really missed the boat, and then just the like a lot of the heel turns we've seen this year from WWE, unfortunately, pushed them right off a cliff.
Yeah. And of course, the rest of Money in the Bank, we had Naomi, not a ton of news coming out of this. Naomi won the Women's Money in the Bank ladder match, which would loom large for July. And then also Seth Rollins won the WWE, the Men's Money in the Bank as well, which would loom large for him later on in the summer. And Jakob Fatu finally making the turn against Solo Sikoa, setting up would be a somewhat a soon-to-be babyface run, just put on pause for a bit due to dental surgery or whatever, but I think he'll have a health. If health stays with him, he'll have a big 2026. But yeah, other than that, not much with Money in the Bank. There was a few news bits, and again, the R-Truth thing pretty much dominated. But yeah, you had Seth Rollins and Naomi winning the annual deals and essentially guaranteed title changes at some point down the road too.
Yeah, I think the interesting thing with these is, well, now of course Naomi had to vacate her title for the best reason, but when I think about Naomi's cash in and how well WWE Evolution 2 was received and how it had like the least build into it, it's so interesting to me because that was such a surprising moment to end what was probably their best show of the year to that point on. And I was in the camp of a lot of people, and that you're just so happy for the woman that is behind the performer, right, getting her due. And then with Seth, we had the worked injury angle a few months later that I'm sure you'll be talking about in a bit, and the dramatic dropping of the crutches to recreate the heist of the century. But my big thing with this was like it was kind of cool because they don't always use the Money in the Bank briefcase as a star maker. And to me, it felt like there was an effort to do that with Naomi. They knew she was white hot. They knew she was on this great run. And I feel like the use of the Money in the Bank briefcase should be used for moments like that more. And they're much better about it with the women of recent than the men, it feels like. So the men, it's been to do hot potato title changes, but Tiffany Stratton benefited. Naomi would have did benefit and then had to vacate because of the best reason ever. So I hope that the use of that translates to the men's division at some point too.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see about that.
Yeah, I'm not holding my breath on it, but I hope so.
Exactly. Let's go over the rest of the month of WWE. Two big chunks here, and so I'll read through these and then kick over to you for any thoughts. As you alluded to earlier, the John Cena pipe bomb promo to CM Punk on SmackDown that led to what you said it was Cenanomics or Thuganomics. What was the Punk retort?
Punkonomics, right?
Punkonomics, yes, Punkonomics, yes. That was it. And of course, we had the we were talking earlier about this when. As far as to how John Cena revealed that CM Punk was going to, that he could have the title match. However, he had to go to Saudi Arabia. So he made that whole thing, part of the angle that he would never go back and all this just kind of adding to the intrigue and all that. But yeah, we had name drops of Nick Nemeth and Matt Cardona. Of course, that would soon pay off later in the year. The last time is now tournament. Asuka returned after a year's absence due to a knee injury, entering the Queen of the Ring tournament. It was just kind of a weird announcement. They just announced that she was coming back just like that. No surprise return or anything like that. So she was just ready to go. WWE and Slim Jim extended their partnership with a Center Ring sponsorship and also table branding. Yes, 2025 in the year of our Lord, we have Slim Jim on tables, always prominent featured. The TKO era certainly is here to stay. Carlito won the WWC Puerto Rico Championship and then later became a free agent after his contract expired. So Carlito's basically the on as was pointed out to me, the on-screen equivalent of like mailbox money. He just showed up, didn't have to do much, was in some vignettes and background promos of the Judgment Day, and that was about it. We started to creep closer to Unreal, the Netflix docuseries being released in July. Episode descriptions were revealed, and we finally did get a release date in July. Two house shows in Mexico were official for July, and that AAA talent would appear. Of course, their deal going through or go through later in the year. Of course, we already knew from April that WWE is purchasing the majority of AAA. Bayley made her return for the first time since WrestleMania 41, appearing on Raw. Becky Lynch defeated Lyra Valkyria for the women's Intercontinental title. Nikki Bella, her return was added to Raw. There were some Brie rumors, but Brie said that WWE had not contacted her about returning, saying, quote unquote, "I didn't change my number." Cody Rhodes appeared in the new trailer for the Naked Gun reboot. A trademark was filed for WWE Late Night. It was later revealed that comedian Tony Hinchcliffe was set to host WWE Late Night during SummerSlam weekend. Spoiler alert, that would not happen. Pat McAfee explained his recent absence. He said he was getting pretty exhausted. More on that in July. Corey Graves filled in on Raw for second straight week. Dominic Mysterio challenged Octagon Jr. to an Intercontinental title match at Money in the Bank. Suffered a rib injury during the month, but he was not expected to be out long. Of course, we just talked about that a minute ago. He would be out of Night of Champions. Vince McMahon sold over 1.5 million shares of TKO stock. The Karrion Kross drama started to begin or started to kind of build a little bit more. We learned his contract was reportedly up this summer. Liv Morgan dislocated her shoulder during a match on Raw against Kairi Sane, had to have surgery. Of course, she just returned this past weekend. Kairi Sane was upset, saying she never wants to hurt anyone and all that. And also, not a great month for Morgan. An alleged stalker was arrested outside the Performance Center, and he faces at that point was facing up to 5 years in prison. It definitely more of not a trend, but I think more that news is starting to get out there more. People in airports, people in hotels, all this stuff, and certainly the call has been out there that WB really needs to add more private security or figure out how to do something because these people are just in airports all the time and just they really get the worst of the worst that are coming after them. It's unfortunate. It's just a matter of time unless they do something, and we'd obviously hate to see that. The company added a rare house show in Texas to their July schedule. Joaquin Wilde said he was good after being knocked out during a speed match, and Noam Dar had to replace him on another speed match, and he picked up win over Lexus King in that bout. Thoughts about any of that?
Sure. You talking about the stalker and the security, like macro issues is such an interesting one. I always go back to, I'm a big Kevin Owens gal, so that guy can do no wrong by me. But in an interview with Chris Van Vliet, he talked about like how he'll sneak little phrases into autographs sometimes, and he had one that was like, "Just don't go to the airport." He's like, just leave us alone at the airport. But he had said, when the popularity of wrestling companies rise, so does that behavior. And he was like, for me, it's uncomfortable. But he said for the women, like they get surrounded and it just doesn't seem like for a multi-billion-dollar company, it should be that big of a deal to hire like local law enforcement to help people out or whatever. But this behavior, I think you're right. I don't know if there's more of it or if there's more awareness about it or both, but that's a big conversation that I think needs to stay a big conversation right now. I think it's important that the safety of performers is taken seriously, quite frankly. But you had mentioned Liv Morgan having a tough time. because she also dislocated her shoulder that month. It felt like they were, that kind of ties into what was happening with Brie Bella, because it felt like we were headed maybe toward a tag program, and then the Liv injury stilted that a little bit. But the other piece of that is Bryan Danielson still being in legal dispute about yes behavior. He's not even using it on a t-shirt, so pretty sure legally there's no leg to stand on because that's in perpetuity, but like you can't tell the crowd what not to say. But that all kind of seemed to tie together, and yeah, the Bailey return is something that I feel like flew, I don't want to say it flew under the radar because it felt like a shot to the arm when she was back, but she's been kind of pretty quietly doing some incredible work this year. I feel like she's so often underrated, and this year she hasn't had like a lot of PLE appearances, but she's done just some incredible work with what she has given to help elevate other talent. I feel like that's her biggest strength. You mentioned the Asuka return kind of being unceremonious, but I will say, like, for how long she was out, it felt like she didn't really miss a beat. She was so in it. Becky returning with this, certainly what seems like a Trump parody character, has been something else too. Like, I feel like she always takes a minute to settle into her heel characters because I think she's naturally inclined as a baby face, but when she hits it, she's off and running. And then the Slim Jim partnerships, I don't love that the ring mats and everything around them look like my laptop did in 2012, like with all the stickers on the back.
Yeah,
But
been there, done that.
I will say the Slim Jim tables are cheesy, but the one that gets me every time is the Prime Energy drink display. That
Oh,
one is the
yes.
most egregious to me. But yeah, we talked about the Cena delivering the pipe bomb on CM Punk a little bit before, but I'll just emphasize that, like, I thought that was probably the best work of his heel run. Like, I thought he knocked that completely out of the park, and I felt like that was maybe the most authentic heel John Cena that we could get. Even though it was a catalyst for something that I didn't end up really liking, I thought in a vacuum that promo was something else. So in an eventful month on several fronts as we're kind of going through this, but oh, and Cody being in the trailer for Naked Gun, go see that movie. It's fantastic. That's all I'll say. Cody has a very, very, very small part, but I'm just here to put over Naked Gun.
That's right. It's available on Paramount Plus right now for those people
It's
have that
so
service.
good. If you're a Joke a Minute comedy fan, it's unbelievable. They did such a great job with
Good
it.
stuff. Let's go over to more with the month of WWE, and then we'll move on to AEW. We had Shane McMahon saying that Vince was enjoying life. No plans to start a wrestling company. Triple H and Stephanie McMahon met with Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. as their White House ties get tighter and tighter. Report revealed that Vince McMahon at one point attempted to purchase Bare Knuckle Fighting Championship. Stephanie said that Vince is probably his own biggest nemesis. That was a headline. It was a story that got a ton of page views. I'll tell you that much. It was like unreal, just that headline, and that was it. And it was like huge on social. One of those weird things that, just like goes like spikes up. It's like, huh, interesting. Finn Balor and JD McDonagh won the World Tag Team titles on Raw. Julia won the Women's United States title on SmackDown. Gunther regained the World Heavyweight title on Raw, defeating Jey Uso. Of course, Goldberg made his return on Raw. It was revealed he'd be facing Gunther in his final match at Saturday night's main event. And he said he'd been extremely limited with some of his training due to various injuries. Hikuleo made his in-ring debut official during a main event taping. Of course, his new name, Tala Tonga. Hulk Hogan expected to make a full recovery after adverse reaction to surgery. This was would begin, of course, a big story we'll talk more about in the July episode. A Hulk Hogan themed bar set to open across from Madison Square Garden. The inaugural Evolve champion was crowned, that being Jackson Drake. Jade Cargill set to make her acting debut in a Jonathan Majors film. Janelle Grant requested documents and emails from WWE and Vince McMahon to challenge the arbitration ruling. As that case continues to slowly roll on, Valhalla announced that her contract was not being renewed by WWE. WWE officially announced that WrestleMania 42 was returning to Las Vegas. Again, poor New Orleans. The sons of Scott Steiner, Mark Henry, and Titus O'Neil, part of the new NIL class. Michelle McCool joined the Undertaker's podcast as a new co-host. The Undertaker revealed that he underwent heart surgery in April. He was also asked if he would join WWE's creative team. He said, "I would definitely entertain it." And we certainly know it is, he's very involved in AAA and NXT and all that. So he's getting more and more involved. So more than entertain it, that's for sure. Saraya said that she hadn't had any conversation with WWE after she became a free agent. Almost said he re-signed a contract. Why? Who knows? Because he never used him. Michael Chandler, UFC fighter, said he's spoken with Triple H about a future in WWE. I find that just really hard to believe. WWE filed the trademark for a new Paul Heyman nickname, the Oracle, that they really haven't used. Roman Reigns set to play Akuma in the Street Fighter movie. Chad Gable injured. He was set for surgery, so he's been out for quite some time. Company confirmed that SmackDown was moving back to 2 hours in July. There was a Netflix live broadcast of SmackDown that was delayed due to a power outage. I believe that was overseas. And then War Games was announced officially return for Survivor Series, which just happened this past weekend. And Roman Reigns was advertised as his return to the company would come in the next month. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, I just, the jumps are so funny from like Vince McMahon having no plans to start a wrestling company and enjoying life, but he tried to buy bare knuckle fighting. Like, it almost seems like this guy is kind of untrustworthy.
Yes, a little bit. Just a little bit.
A little bit. You know, it's interesting too, because the alignment with the current administration for Triple H and Stephanie McMahon, obviously Linda McMahon being in the cabinet and these things, is something that has been under the microscope a lot this year. I think that's part of what compounded some of the CM Punk stuff earlier in the month. Like, what almost dragged out these issues was like, CM Punk has always been so vocal and he's always been such a lightning rod in basically every facet of this game. It's like, you went to Saudi Arabia, this company's aligned with MAGA, where's your voice? I think was there. So this whole month, I felt like there was kind of this shadow over CM Punk, whether it directly involved him or not. It was a lot of people just kind of questioning, I think, like, how is it that at AEW you punched people in the head, but not here. Like, I think there's like a lot of people online that were like, really? It was the real glass comment that set you off, but this is so misaligned with what you've said that you are. So I just remember like that conversation with CM Punk staying alive for this whole month in part because of things like that. Man, some title changes in here that were unceremonious, the world tag titles being on Finn and JD. They defended them twice, I think, in like 4 months. Julia, a heartbreakingly bad creative direction and booking for her. I've been on so many post shows on Fightful saying like, the way to have her get over is just to have her wrestle. You don't need to dress it up and all of this like behavior and managers and all these things. Like, just let her go out there and wrestle matches. That is a bummer because I was looking so forward to what that title reign was going to look like. The Goldberg stuff was, I mean, it's comical at this point. But what I like about this is him facing Gunther at Saturday night's main event. Now we're looking at like, will Gunther also be the one to retire John Cena as we sit here in December? As we look ahead, will he be the guy to retire Brock Lesnar? So there's like this cool legacy that you could choose to build around Gunther if you wanted, which kind of started here a little bit, which I think is pretty interesting. The Undertaker being more involved in WWE is creative is so funny because I feel like he's so vocal on his podcast, as is mentioned in here, like about being like, kids these days don't know what wrestling is. And now he's like, but I would consider being on the creative team. It's like, yeah. I don't know if you actually feel that way. But also a couple of notes to close out this section of it a little bit. I think Chad Gable's injury sucks. I didn't like the stuff he was doing with Grande Americano, but I'm such a proponent of the Creed brothers being on television as a tag team, especially on Raw and in a division that needs it so badly, and they're just not allowed to without Chad Gable for some reason. So I feel like those are two guys, especially Julius. Like, Brutus is great too, but Julius is a freak athlete, and them just collecting dust is so inexcusable to me. And then the War Games returning for Survivor Series, as we sit here a couple days after PLE that I think was poorly received by most, it's kind of the reverse engineering of the War Games stipulation on matches that don't have it because the animosity isn't warranted. It's kind of making War Games lose its shine. Like, we don't just have to have it so that William Regal can say it every year. But I think there's a lot of people that are starting to question, like, a four-match PLE for these prices, for this delivery, is something that is wearing on fans a little bit. That even WWE diehards were like, this PLE was not it. So it's been a very up and down year for WWE, and I feel like the past 2 years, people were so firmly riding this hot streak, and it kind of speaks just to the overall pendulum of momentum swinging between WWE and AEW. Like, we're gearing up for the Fightful Awards each year, and the first year it was very AEW heavy. The past 2 years it was very WWE heavy. Early, it's looking like it's going to be AEW heavy again. So it's just interesting to see on American television with the top two companies how the momentum just flies back and forth about stuff.
Yeah. You bring up something about Punk I think about a lot is more than I should, just doing stuff around the house. Randomly you have
Of
thoughts, you're going
course.
to walk, things pop in your head. I don't understand what changed so much that he was so, to your point, so angry before, and then all of a sudden he is just, lack of a better word, subservient, and
Sure.
to a place that, and granted it's different leadership, but it is to a not a full extent. There's still Paul Levesque and Stephanie, there's still this group there that fired him on his wedding day, and
Yeah.
there was all this animosity and all these things. And yeah, you can get over some stuff. I wonder if, I think it's a combination of two things, a few things. I think he realizes this is it, and it's a chance to make good money and ingratiate himself. And I think he's really been kind of over the top about it, especially when he came back. I want to run NXT, I want to do this. And this, like, he wants to be a lifer and earn that money for as long as he can. I also wonder if ultimately he's at the stage where he's like, I respect this hierarchy more than I do with AW, or I just, but he can, he just, the way he just blasted himself out of town, and the guy that, we saw the footage that there, he went after Tony Khan, and he got so mad, he jumped at it's, and to see kind of what happened after, it's it. I fully still don't understand it. What was so bad that he just set off completely, and now you see no signs of that. I don't know. I don't. I just. I have a tough time wrapping my head around that because it's the same person. People can change, but in that short of a time frame, it's hard for me to.
It's
I don't
like 3 months
know.
apart.
Yeah. It's hard for me just to get my head around.
I always go back to like a few things with it. Like, to me, if you're not happy opening a show in front of 70,000 people wrestling against Samoa Joe, who you have one of the most historic rivalries with in wrestling, to the point where an approved line about like what even was it with Jack Perry? What did he say?
Oh, the Cry Me a River.
Cry Me a River line, which was approved, that it makes you so mad that you're starting a fight minutes before you're supposed to go out. Like, there's something deep-seated that was not resolved. Like, whether it was stuff from the first time around or whatever. But there is also this aspect that we've seen repeatedly from WWE talent that have gone to AEW and then kind of flipped back to WWE of like, there is this weird layer of respect there for the fact that it's the biggest game in town, or they just take it more seriously than they do in AEW. And to your point, like, Punk also, he had a good relationship with TKO when he was there for UFC, so maybe there's just some comfort in that. But I think the big thing that you hit the nail on the head with was like, this is your last shot, dude. Like, this is it. This is the last shot at like big money, probably. And it's wrestling, so never say never. He could get to the end of this contract and run NXT, or he could show up in AEW and have the match with Kenny Omega and ride off into the sunset. It's wrestling. We've seen
Right.
it all, right? But there is something to be said about when people are on better behavior because it's their last shot, and for making like the money that CM Punk, and in his defense, is capable of also garnering for these companies, I think is something else. But I think the problem that a lot of people have, and I'm not saying whether it's right or wrong, but a lot of the criticism that I see of him is like, man, you're talking about workers' rights. You're hearing that, like, look at what happened to Ridge Holland, right? Like, these NXT kids are making 60, 70, 80 grand a year, and it's taxed, and they're responsible for all of their own housing and gear and all these things. They're not getting paid extra for these TNA appearances. Talent now have to pay for tickets that aren't comped. Like all of the grandstanding he did about Saudi Arabia, workers' rights, like all these things just seems to have gone by the wayside. And we're always subjected to it being in wrestling media because you're going to see that cycle. What makes me nauseous is on screen the fact that he became catchphrase guy is like so go. Like, boy, it's great to be alive in City. I think the character sucks. Like,
Yeah.
that's what people are like. Oh, but you loved him in AEW. I was like, yeah, because him and Eddie Kingston were beating the dog crap out of each other and
Yeah.
trading barbs, man. That was interesting to me. Boy, it's great to be alive in catchphrase City. Hockey team, my wife. Like it got really, really old for me as a fan watching it on screen, paired with like the constant discourse around it was a lot. And this was a big month for it because there were so many things that felt like, why aren't you speaking out against Saudi Arabia? Why aren't you speaking out against MAGA? How did you apologize for what you had said before? Like a lot of what a lot of people view as hypocrisy, and I think understandably so, even if you don't agree with it, you can see the side of it, right? It all came to a head in this particular month. But to your point, like he debuted at Survivor Series and the previous All In was in August of that month. So it was quite a 180 personality wise in a 3 month time span. So which side of it was disingenuous, we may never know.
That's right. That's right. So let's go to his old employer, AEW. This is the AEW and ROH section. And so we had, it was during month for AEW, not like a huge amount of news, just kind of little things. We'll get to kind of their biggest news of the month here in a second. But All In, of course, Lumi, they didn't have a pay-per-view this month. They had All In. They were setting things up for that, of course, in mid-July. They already had set a, were set to set some non-WWE North American records in terms of attendance and some financials and all that. They set up a Casino Gauntlet match, of course. Kenny Omega and Okada were official to compete for the brand new, we love brand new titles, don't we? Brand new unified title, which
Boy,
combine
do we.
the con I feel like I need a flow chart, the Continental title and the International title, winner take all match. However, the titles themselves would not be retired, as I'm sure we'll see at some point when they divide up, assuming Takeshita wins the Continental Classic, which I think he will, and then Okada will still be the international champion and defend that. It's just a whole thing. Sting was set to appear at StarCast during AEW All In Week, so a lot of people thought, well, it might be a good spot for him to appear at All In. Will Ospreay and Swerve Strickland challenge the Young Bucks with a key stipulation at All In, of course, that being that if they lose their EVP titles. WBD announced their 2026 plans to split up the company. However, Tony Khan not concerned about this at all. Even if he was, he wouldn't tell us. Alex Windsor announced that she was signed with AEW, and then she celebrated by getting engaged to Will Ospreay. Bryan Danielson returned to the ring, kind of answering a Max Caster open challenge following AEW Collision. This was a dark match type thing, and it was just like, quick psycho knee, and that was it. He would appear a lot during this month, maybe getting limber for what would to come in All In. Danhausen's contract reportedly set to expire this summer, and we learned later on he's going to be under that contract for quite some time, even though he really doesn't want to. Both Dynamite 300 and Collision 100 were announced for July. The big news of the month really was Grand Slam Mexico, which was Mercedes Moné. It was a huge success, both AEW's debut at Arena Mexico, and a combination of these companies, part of this big week that they had there. Huge success, a lot of viewers, which was good. And overall, it's just a different feel, different flow, and was a nice kind of a mid-year change, especially in a month that didn't have a pay-per-view. On this show, Mercedes Moné winning the CMLL Women's title, really quick win, was set to defend it at Fantastica Mania later that week. Bryan Danielson appeared on the show, actually at the Ring of Honor CMLL Global Wars. It was taped before the show. Made a surprise appearance there, of course. The Beast Mortos appeared on the during this week, and he thanked both Tony Khan and Salvatore Lutharoth for his appearance during the week. That's because there was a falling out previously with CMLL, and that bridge seems to have been repaired. The company held Fighter Fest, Grand Slam Mexico, and Summer Blockbuster shows all throughout this month. Summer Blockbuster, I believe, was 4 hours. Fighter Fest was 4 hours. So a lot of AEW in our lives this month. Hook revealed that he was recovering from a concussion, or he said he would be back in AEW soon. Jamie Hayter out of action with an injury. And Jim Ross said his cancer was gone and he was still targeting his return at All In, which would happen. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, I think, with All In looming and the records being broken, that's just, it's always good to see wrestling in a healthy place, regardless of what company it is. If wrestling is setting records in any capacity, that's great. And when there's multiple companies that are able to do so, that's healthy for the wrestling industry. So that stuff's always just wonderful. And Omega and Okada, what I remember when that match was set was it sold tickets, like another 1,000 tickets or something got sold as soon as they announced it. So just very cool that a deep rivalry that defined a different company slash partner of AEW translated to American soil in a way that it was moving tickets and that people still wanted to see it. I just think really special. Alex Windsor signing with AEW and getting engaged to Ospreay. What I loved is how quickly she went from being Will Ospreay's fiance to a lot of people in their eyes to being Alex Windsor. Like she
Yes.
came in and a lot of people were like, "Oh, that's Ospreay's girl." I remember seeing online, and then very, very quickly people learned like, "Nope, this is not like a, oh well, can you sign my wife?" Like, no, she's there to do some work. Her coming into the Toni Storm story pretty much right away, I think also helped establish her not only as a top talent because she was with the title holder at the time, but I think there's a lot of people that maybe didn't know Alex Windsor had so much whimsy in her on the character side. They knew she was a badass, right? So that was really wonderful. That was really wonderful for her to have such a great establishing intro. And I think AEW just in general has been so much better about we're signing this talent. These are the creative plans bringing them in because it kind of felt like they would suck up people and then not do a ton with them. They've been much more intentional. We saw that with Speed Jet. We're seeing that across the board, which is just a healthier dynamic overall. Grand Slam Mexico, fantastic. Mercedes with the year that she's had is, what do you say? Like there are people that will criticize it and you don't have to like this story, but when you hear promoters talk about it, when you hear her opponents that are salivating to throw their titles her way talk about how much those matches mean to her, it's really cool to see her follow through on what seemed to be her mission to expand what women's wrestling can be around the globe. That's a special thing. But what I remember with Grand Slam Mexico too was Hangman coming out, cutting a promo in Spanish, and like just everybody being like, "What? Where? How? Why? How did this happen? This is so cool." So that what a way to kick off the show, and what an incredible crowd! Like hot for everything. It was so much fun. Every time Bryan Danielson does something small in the ring, I'm like, just don't retire. Just get back in there, but. And yeah, some health updates. Glad Jamie Hayter is better now. When she had such an extensive back injury, you always worry about those things, but she's transformed, I think, into one of the best women's baby faces AEW has. And Jim Ross's cancer being gone, man, that guy has gone through it health-wise. It's good to see. Even in December, we're just hearing that he's healthy again. So, good to see that. Good to see that all around.
Exactly. Yeah, he's I was just writing up the notes for July, and he appeared at All In, but then the week after he said, "Oh, I almost didn't make because I had a really bad fall in my hotel room." It's like, God, this guy Cannot catch a break, but yeah, he
Oh.
certainly was back at All In. Let's go through the rest of the month in AEW and Ring of Honor. John Moxley and AEW was sued for negligence and civil assault over a dynamite incident back in 2023. And people had to kind of go back and be like, what happened? So yeah, he shoved out a cameraman and was not, or a production person was not planned. And the person, all this time later, decided to launch a lawsuit. A judge ordered AEW, Kevin Kelly, and the Tate Twins lawsuit to go to private arbitration. Keith Lee, remember him, said on X that health has been good for quite some time amid his AEW absence. No idea when he's going to come back or ever. Must have the longest contract of all time. Commander suffered a significant knee injury during a match in Mexico that resulted in him being pulled from Summer Blockbuster and also officially pulled from Fantastica Mania. That was a big bummer because that was a big high profile trios match he was going to be part of and had to be pulled from that due to a could have been a lot worse, but a pretty bad knee injury. And he just made his return, what, last month or 2 months ago, something like that. Kota Ibushi made his surprise return on an episode of Collision, and he was set to be in action soon after that. Matt Jackson said somebody high up in AEW reached out about a revival of being the Elite. Mercedes Moné and the Beast Mortos confirming a relationship, a union I never saw coming, that's for sure. It was learned that Private Party's contracts would be expiring soon. However, as we sit here still in December, soon has not happened yet. Rebel, now she was undergoing surgery to remove a tumor. She had a really tough year health-wise. Ty Mello finally made her return at Fyter Fest. Speaking of people that we hadn't seen in quite some time, Wardlow and Camille. And also, Rick Boogs, formerly of WWE, was among five wrestlers set to be gladiators in the American Gladiators reboot. Hiroshi Tanahashi's final UK match was set for AEW New Japan Forbidden Door. That'd be happening in August, and that was revealed in June. Dalton Castle, return vignette, aired on Ring of Honor TV. Maria Kanellis and Mike Bennett announced they were expecting their third child. And finally, we had some matches made for Supercard of Honor, Bandido versus Kanosuke Takeshita, and Thunder Rosa versus Athena. Course, for her women's title as well. Thoughts about any of that?
Yeah, so let's start with Beast Mortos and Mercedes confirming their relationship, and then we'll back into some of the more substantive stuff because that sticks out to me because if you hear people talk about like Beast Mortos, he's apparently like GQ level handsome. Like he is such an attractive dude, but obviously he always has the mask on, and I just think it's very funny that like you want to talk Beauty and the Beast, but she found someone that's going to do all her TikToks with her and
Do
basically
dancing and things like I've seen a
having,
few of
oh
those.
my goodness. It's so fun that when wrestlers are having fun. Like I'm all for that. So good for them, but yeah, there was a the legal stuff is kind of funny. I feel like maybe Kevin Kelly and the Tate twins overestimated how much pull Ian Riccaboni's comments in a Discord conversation had, and that if you can't say Andrade El Idolo, like maybe it's a performance issue and not so much because of anything but that. But I think that ended up fizzling out anyway. And you know, the Moxley thing of him getting sued, it kind of struck me the same way that like yesterday there was video of Paul Heyman pushing a child out of the way, and at first glance, you're like, you're an asshole. You pushed a child out of the way. But when you think about like when you're in the moment of doing certain things, like he might have not seen that that was a kid. He just saw a human body flying his way and reacted, right? I'm not saying that it's acceptable or whatever, but like if you think about it from the performer's perspective, like Jon Moxley then would push someone out of the way because you're not really like thinking as consciously, and that's not an excuse for that behavior, but it's kind of an explanation behind one. If you're in a match where you're kicking everybody's butt and someone's just there, like that kind of thing can happen. So we'll see what happens with those. Keith Lee, I would love to see back. I think, you know, the nature of certain injuries or certain medical issues that people are assigned with is sometimes evaluated by talent and promotions and medical teams with three different lenses. So you just hope that the guy is as okay as he feels, and if he is cleared, I would hope to see him back in the ring because I love watching Keith Lee yeet people into the sky. If it's a thing where he feels ready to go, but promotions don't feel comfortable using him or whatever. Like you hope that he continues to mend, but I always try to keep that in mind with injuries in general, of like sometimes your clean bill of health looks different to what it might mean for a wrestling company to put you in a wrestling context. So that's certainly something with his medical history that kicks around in my mind. But I miss seeing him fight. Maybe with Swerve back now, we'll get him back in the ring. But I miss him. He's a really fun presence to have on the show. Kota Ibushi returning at Collision now in December. My heart's just broken because he's out long term. But that one was a genuine surprise. Like, I think that was one people hadn't bookmarked as ready for a return super soon. So I always like it when wrestling can catch you off guard with things like that. And Private Party's contracts, I thought for a while, like, man, NXT needs the tag division help. If they were available, they'd be a no-brainer for that product, but feels like maybe their contracts aren't up. We've also heard like rumors that the Hurt Syndicate really like those guys and would be interested in working with them. So we'll see where the chips fall for them. But yeah, other than that, I am all for any American Gladiators reboots. I loved that show as a kid. And the Supercard of Honor thing, that kind of feels like those were, throwaway announcements because ROH isn't a huge priority. But if you told me today that Bandido Takeshita was your match of the year, I couldn't argue with it. I don't know if it's mine, but that match was so incredible and it was kind of created out of thin air. Bandido, I think, in the hunt for wrestler of the year as well. You could argue that with Takeshita. He won the G1 too, right? So some matches are just magic. That was certainly one of them. And at the time that this was announced, I was like, oh, that'll be a fun match, but like there's not a story there or whatever. But it ended up being a phenomenal match. A phenomenal match.
Yeah, agreed. Let's go. This is new since the last time we spoke. This section,
Ooh,
NXT TNA or
okay.
TNA, because all these companies are so intermingled. I had to finally combine them. I think with the May episode, I finally just combined them because I'm like, there's just so much stuff like this over here, this over here. So this is all the happenings in NXT TNA and AAA because, again, they're just everyone is everyone. I expect that to be consistent for the future, especially with today's news that NXT or TNA, NXT has a new TV deal. Essentially, they kind of do. TNA has a new TV deal on AMC. If only they had A and E, it'd just been another A, and
Yeah.
it's a whole thing. It's a whole thing. I guess to do with AMC. Yeah, I don't know. I go on this for way too long. Anyway, Mariah May made her surprise debut on NXT, just really days after her run with AEW, her contract expired. She revealed her new name the week after. They didn't. It's always a tell when they don't reveal they don't say the person's name when they first appear. And so I was like, "What is she doing here? What is he doing here?" And you always know that that name reveal is coming the week after, and it did.
The game just changed because they just showed up.
Exactly. Just be as vague as possible until they're ready. But Blake Monroe, Mariah May's new name, she made her in-ring debut at an NXT live show, and she also signed with a Paradigm Talent Agency, as did a lot of WWE talents throughout the course of 2025. Of course, we had Worlds Collide, which was that was announced first announced after the purchase of AAA was announced at WrestleMania. The company, after the show, touting a new YouTube record for AAA because they streamed the show live, which I thought was a really smart idea because so many new people were able to watch it. And I liked how as much as people are concerned about you're taking away the authentic nature of AAA because there's so much of a WWE influence, I think sometimes there are certain aspects that can be a positive. I thought that was a positive. I thought the production was, and also the fact that they had not shy away from speaking Spanish and not doing
Yes.
translations or anything like that. And they allowed Finn Balor to speak Spanish. And I thought it was different. Like, yeah, you can watch this, but it may not necessarily be, you might not understand everything, but that's just kind of the way it's going to be. And I think that's a, I like that they did that. They stayed true to that. Lindsay Dorado had to replace Joaquin Wilde on the show, again, due to the aforementioned injury. Lillian Garcia was also making her ring announcing debut for the company as part of this, or part of the AAA kind of relationship, so to speak. So that happened on that show as well. Cedric Alexander made his TNA debut during some Impact tapings. Former WCW announcer Mark Madden was set to guest commentate at a TNA event. TNA Slammiversary starting to take shape for July. Joe Hendry set challenge for the TNA World title. A lot of people thought that would be it. It was not it. Spoiler alert. Jason Hotch re-signed a new contract with TNA. They had against all odds. Trick Williams defended against Elijah, who later in the month tore his tricep, so he'd be out for quite some time. And the Inspiration, they were on your bingo card return this year. You can punch that square. They were back in action, would be basically throughout the course of the year. Some other notes, I think Killer Kelly may have returned on the show. There's some news about her. The company announced dates for Emergence, Victory Road, and also a live Impact. We learned that Impact replays were set to stream Fridays on YouTube throughout the summer. TNA Plus introduced a new free tier and also a special live stream set for Fridays as well. So they're trying, at this point, we're just trying to get more people to watch however they can, without completely, you know, undercutting their subscription service that they had somewhat built up, I guess. Conan said that WWE's end game is to get AAA a TV deal. To this point, they do not have a domestic deal here in the U.S. They do just signed a new one for Mexico. We'll talk about later in the series. Vikingo won the AAA Mega Championship from Alberto El Patron, something that was essentially spoiled in the month of May on WWE TV with the whole Chad Gable thing and all that. A rematch was set to headline Triple Mania Regia, which was set to be a cage match. Los Garza won the AAA tag team titles on that show as well, Vikingo retaining his title. JC Jane was set to defend her NXT women's title Evolution against Jordan Grace. Noam Dar had to vacate the Heritage Cup due to injury. Channing Stacks Lorenzo won the Heritage Cup trophy on NXT. Eddie Thorpe said that he had asked for his release, which he got. Tyra Mae Steele, her in-ring debut was set for NXT TV. And then Cora Jade revealed that emergency surgery led to her missing the 2023 edition of NXT Stand and Deliver. Thoughts about any of all that?
Sure. I think Mariah May in NXT has been kind of a mixed bag. I think more recently she's kind of just settled into who she is in this world, or Blake Monroe now, I should say. But that was a huge dream of hers, so that's awesome. And a huge pickup for NXT. And it came on the heels of them calling up a ton of their top women, Roxanne Perez officially, Stephanie Vaquer, Julia, etc. So that was a nice kind of like replenishing kind of thing. Worlds Collide, the presentation was the win, as you kind of had said. I felt like there, it was so nice to see a show that didn't have a bunch of sponsors on the ring mat. I feel like Corey Graves gave the commentary performance of his life on that. He was unreal. And they did let Lucha Wrestling be Lucha Wrestling, which I think was a big concern to a lot of people. And yeah, as far as TNA, I feel like the biggest takeaway for them, as you're kind of running down all this, is like they tried so hard to make their product as accessible as possible without a TV deal, and it still didn't work. So as we stand here today, having heard the announcement that they got a TV deal, I think it's really good because they needed that to make it sustainable. And if you look at the history of them being on like the Pursuit TV channel and Spike for 9 years, 11 years, something like that, like they have had ups and downs about where they fit into the marketplace. So I think a TV deal was super, super necessary for them. And Vikingo winning the AAA Mega Championship, it's so crazy because Americans' view of Vikingo is so different than it seems than Mexico's view of Vikingo, whereas we think he's a very fun and exciting guy to watch. Vikingo got heel reactions like crazy.
Yes, yes, yes.
So that was a disconnect that I just wasn't aware existed. And I'll just close this out by saying I miss Noam Dar so much. Like, I love his work. I love his character. He had to vacate the NXT Heritage Cup. He had just come back from a really extensively long injury, and he's been out since, and it's months, months later. I'm like Noam Dar stan account girl. Like, I love his work. I think he did so much great character work in addition to his just incredible technical ability. Like, he's so much fun. If he was around, like him versus Obafemi would be a program I wanted to see, you know? So he's missed for his veteran and in-ring prowess a lot, but he was also just such a silly character on the show. And I just, He's just one of those guys where I'm just like, I just love that guy. Like I want to see that guy on my screen all the time. So, some good stuff, and kind of like you were saying, just even with the NXT and AAA category being new, we've seen this differential in AEW makes partnerships. WWE proactively chose to expand their ecosystem, which is not something they'd previously done through purchases. So whether you think that's a savvy business move and that's something AEW should have done, or you think it's healthier for wrestling that the AEW model pursues partnerships and not buys them out, that's in the eye of the beholder. But this month kind of set up the differentials between the ethoses in both of those companies, and also said, like, it's the Jets and the Sharks. You're either on one side or the other, right? Like that's kind of the way we've gone as far as secondary promotions aligning with the bigger two.
My hope and question, I think I kind of know the answer to this deep down, is like, is TNA interested in ever being an independent third brand again? I don't think they
Sure.
are. I just don't think they are.
Based on the everything we've seen this
Yeah,
year
I
from
just
the relationship
so
with NXT.
yeah, I just I mean it's like I was saying, cause I saw a lot of the discourse today, and it's a positive, but it's again, they're so intertwined with NXT now, and they were very very quick to mention NXT in the release and so on. And I don't know, I just like I think about those things, and again, you think about things like in Hollywood with there's so much talk about Warner Bros. Discovery, and like so many people in Hollywood were like, we don't want to go to Netflix because that means the theater business will be like another massive blow. And also people are hoping it doesn't get merged with certain places because that just folds in, that just again, it decreases the amount of companies in which you can offer stuff, sell stuff, do things, and a different
Sure.
player in town, right? And I think with TNA, it's the same thing, right? If they if there's one less place, if I was thinking like, are they really gonna like battle with WWE for free agents, or are they gonna be
Right.
or W? There's also this thing behind the scenes. There are free agents out there trying to get money. Again, if someone's like, look, we're your partners. Like we kind of need to know what's going on here. We might be interested, or that can help suppress salaries as well. I mean, there's just complications there. My hope, idealistic hope, is they want to have this be a bridge to, and they'll never say this today, they want this to be a bridge to, we want to be independent and have our own
Sure.
thing. My gut says that they don't want that, and I don't think WWE wants that, and I don't think that's good for the business. So they have their TV deal. I just that level of partnership and that level of control by a different group, the extent that it is now, and we're not even in full year one. That's a little concerning for me, but it's that's kind of just the way that things are. And that, I mean, look, they've had all these decades to kind of figure it out, and they haven't. So maybe they're like, look, this is as good as it's gonna get. It's either this or it goes out of business. I don't know.
Yeah, it's also tricky because the when you look at situations like that, like okay, they got sucked up by so and so. I think the natural next thing is like, okay, well, who else would be around? And it's like MLW, NWA. I will say MLW is doing a lot better than people think. Their lawsuit, which was over Tubi, by the way, with WWE, got them like $25 million, which, to be honest, is probably more, my guess, than TNA is going to get from the deal they just signed. So they're doing much better than the perception of MLW is, but like I don't think there's a clear number three, and I think that is never in service of wrestling. So it's not even just that TNA is being sucked up, it's that the ambiguity of who the true third alternative is. You know, if you told me 2 years ago, I'd say it's GCW, but that product seems pretty cold right now. I'll never take NWA seriously. I just can't. They've given me no reason to. So it's not even just TNA being sucked up into that system as much as there's not a healthy growing third alternative unless MLW gets catapulted in a really big way forward.
Yep. Let's go to Japan. Zack Sabre Jr. regained the IWGP world title. Yes, as you fist bump there
Oh,
at
DSJ
Ta-Nehisi
Stan.
at Ta-Nehisi Jam. That's the name of the show. Yes, Daisuke Sakamoto. There's an update after a scary in-ring injury. Naito and Bushi revealed their new team name after their run with New Japan ended. Los Tranquilos de Japón. Bad Luck Fale was set to miss the a New Japan G1 play-in match due to a loss in his family. El Desperado set to defend the IWGP Junior title against Jun Kasai at something called Death Pain Invitational, something I would not want to be invited to for fear of bodily injury. El Phantasmo, Miz had to miss some New Japan events due to a knee injury. Hirooki Goto had to miss a show due to an injury. Hiroshi Tanahashi was set to challenge for the IWGP Global title at New Japan Seoul. We had other new title matches, and then Zane Jay and Tatsuya Matsumoto, two young boys, set to debut at New Japan Seoul as well. The company crowned a Best of the Super Juniors 32 winner, Kosei Fujita, who's the youngest ever winner, I believe. 21, 22, I think, something along those lines. So very young. New Japan Dominion happened. Some new champions crowned there. The company revealed some participants for the G1, revealed the full slate of participants, I should say, for the G1 Climax 35, including Konosuke Takeshita and Hiroshi Tanahashi and others. And the company signed Olympic gold medalist Aaron Wolf, I believe in judo. And his debut is going to be set for January. And a lot of people putting a lot on his shoulders as 2026 looms large. Thoughts about any of that?
Well, I'm a Zack Sabre Jr. and TMDK stan. So, of course, what sticks out to me is ZSJ winning against Goto at what was a live event too. So, as much of a ZSJ stan as I am, there were a lot of mixed reactions to this because I think people really, really liked what Goto was doing, and I think there were part of Zack's reign where him as a face didn't really feel like it was clicking. I think the match against Shota Umino at Wrestle Kingdom left a lot to be desired. I think Goto was like a breath of fresh air and somebody that fans of New Japan felt like really earned it. And this happening at a live event was also very surprising to a lot of people. But I'm never mad when Zack Sabre Jr. has gold around his waist, so I was fine with it. But I could understand the mixed reactions. I think the second reign was also very good. Like I think it was more in his wheelhouse. The match quality was way up. He had a fantastic G1. And what kind of got set up out of that was Takeshita, who gets announced this month as well, and obviously went on to win it. So their matches when they met in the G1 were fantastic. I think Zack had a strong G1. I actually liked Takeshita's G1 last year better, but him winning it was an interesting call in how it was perceived. I think hardcore fans of New Japan felt like it was an AEW invader, even though he has a contract with New Japan. But I like that they freshened it up a little bit, and I think the match quality in the later rounds of the G1 was just fantastic. And Fujita, man, is a force to be reckoned with. Him winning the Best of the Super Juniors was a fantastic call. He is young. He is someone that I heard Lyric, who is in the wrestling media space and very in touch, especially with pretty much anything outside the US wrestling, as well as AEW, saying like he could be their next Okada. Like everybody's been kind of looking to the more present day crop of who's going to step up. But if they kind of raise Fujita right, like his live charisma, his in-ring ability, he will just wheel kick your head off. He's incredible, and it feels like they're putting stock in him, and I think it's important that they do because they got to get kind of this younger crop going. Tanahashi being in his last G1 is definitely a heartstring puller, and Aaron Wolf debuting at this upcoming Wrestle Kingdom and the announcement here, it's so cool because a lot of times they try to see how gold medalists will adapt to American television, and I think going into the Japanese ecosystem is such a cool move to make that translation. So I am all for that. I think that's awesome. I know you're not a Death Pain Invitational guy, but Despy is someone who's been injured, but like I feel like he's someone that I'm like, don't miss the boat on this guy. He's already getting later in his career. Fans love him, so I'm all for a Despy push, but yeah, this was the table setting to the G1, which of course sets the table to everything else, right? So
Exactly.
some good stuff in this month, and TMDK and ZSJ forever. That's where I'm at.
So to say, if Noam Dar was to join TMDK, I mean,
Oh,
would you just be like, that's it, just pass
he
out in a fainting
stole my
couch or something?
heart. Yeah, that's all I could ever want.
Exactly. Well, someday we'll put that in the universe, right?
Right.
All right, let's round the bend with the junk drawer. This is the best of everything else that did not fit in any of the other sections above. Bobby Lashley announced for an indie show in France, very random. Mercedes Moné, Naito, and Bushi were announced for RevPro's Summer Sizzler event. Mercedes Moné won the in India, in Australia, Austria rather, Austria Indie Women title. Again, this refrain is that she's just adding more and more titles, and we didn't even see it coming that she was going to have all these titles, and then all of a sudden it's like, wow, that's a lot of belts. Will Nightingale, Mike Bailey, and MJF were announced for a Cannonball Fest benefit show to benefit Jeff Cannonball, who had undergone. I'm trying to remember what the situation is, so I'll pass by. I can't remember if he passed away or if he had an illness or something along those lines. But obviously, an outpouring of support for him. MJF attacked Mystico at MLW Summer of the Beasts, and that was, of course, out of nowhere. MJF, of course, had this past history with MLW back a long time ago, and as part of that kind of angle leading into Grand Slam Mexico, that was quite something. The former Tegan Knox, Nixon Newell, had, quote unquote, a severe lack of booking since her WWE release, and later said the bookings are starting to pick up. She would have quite a booking later on in the year that would not turn out so well. Nick Comoroto and Jonathan Gresham were part of new additions to a upcoming Bloodsport show. CMLL announced dates for their 92nd Anniversario show. MLW announced a trading card partnership with Panini. They also crowned new tag team champions at Summer of the Beast, that being Donovan Dijak and Bishop Dyer. Jakara Jackson wrestled her first post-WWE match in France. A director was chosen for an upcoming biopic on Ronda Rousey for Netflix. Netflix also developing a wrestling-themed drama series called Tuesday Night Titans. Former Ring of Honor wrestler Brian Malonis announced his retirement. Ric Flair canceled appearance following a second diagnosis for skin cancer, and he was having surgery. Miyu Yamashita, rather, off a GCW event due to a lack of a social security number. And yeah, it's an interesting headline to not expect to read throughout this year. NWA announced a streaming deal with Roku. This is another I did not on my card for the year. RVD, Rob Van Dam, and Katie Forbes announced both the pregnancy and they're expecting twin girls. How about that? Shotzi Blackheart announced for multiple GCW dates throughout the summer and also made a surprise appearance at a Hood Slam event after her non-compete ran out from WWE. SiriusXM announced they're formally launching a 24-hour wrestling channel to replace Fight Nation. The Godfather, unharmed following car accident. Batista, rumored for the sequel to Roadhouse. Priscilla Kelly's first up post-WWE match was stopped early due to patella displacement. Remember, she had on social media, she had to come out and say, not a big deal. This happens every once in a while. Timing sucked, but it is what it is. And then Natalya was set to headline an event for Booker T's Reality of Wrestling. Thoughts about any of that?
Sure, I think what you said about Mercedes, this was kind of just heating up the belt collector run. And I'm looking at this and I was like, only one title win in this month? What a slim month for Mercedes.
All
But
right.
just very cool that she was this was a stepping stone and kind of executing her vision, I think, which is awesome. Cannonball Fest was for Jeff Cannonball, who I think is in decline, I want to say, from Alzheimer's. So he
ALS. Yes, I just looked it up. Yes,
ALS.
yes, yes,
Yeah, so
yes.
he I just wanted to call that out because there was such a beautiful spirit around that event. It's in my home state of Jersey, and it was there was just when wrestling is a unifier, even for something that's kind of overall something that's sad here, when a community can rise up and make a difference in a family's life the way that Cannonball Fest did, like it's so nice to take us we follow wrestling like so closely and so nuanced. I'm doing post shows all the time. Like when you pull back the lens a little bit and see how powerful it can be on a human level, I think that's the coolest stuff in the world. So that
Yeah.
was good to see. Tegan Nox, now we sit here and say that, if you get booked, you have to do the matches that you're booked for. So that was a little bit of a, in hindsight, one that There's some complexities to that, certainly. I just want to shout out Dijak and Bishop Dyer are a very, very fun tag team. I know they're kind of tucked away on MLW, so they're not as in the mainstream maybe, but they've been doing some really good post WWE work and have been a very fun big guy tag team that I don't think anybody maybe saw coming. So, shout out to them for the work they've been doing in their post WWE run. I think it's very healthy for wrestling that it's not, well, then they default to AEW. Like they've been creating paths all over the industry. Mustafa Ali, the same thing, right? So I love to see stuff like that. Shotzi took out my boss, Sean Ross Sapp, at an indie day after what was announced here. So I just shout out to her for these types of things, because if you troll my boss, I'm happy about that. So and then closing this out, Natalya with headlining Booker T's Reality of Wrestling. I think that match was with Promise Braxton, and this was in the early phases of the low-key legend Natty character, and we kind of just finally saw the return of what that could look like on Monday Night Raw. And I think she's been doing really inspired work, and I feel like everyone with her for so many years has been great work or not much of a character. It's not that she's not capable. We see that, and that match with Promise Braxton, if it's the one that I'm thinking of, was just fantastic. So, this being a piece in that evolution is awesome. Is really, really awesome. So, some good stuff in the junk drawer here. Much better than my actual junk drawer, I'll say that. You're just gonna find like a bunch of like there's some old baseball cards in there, and I found my ornament hooks for my tree in there the other day. So
Oh, good. Those are there's always like a patch of you remember. Oh, I'll remember where these are, and that happens in like May or
a hundred
June, and
percent.
then it comes in when you need them. It's like I don't know where they are. And then the next
Put it
summer you
away with
find
the
them. Yeah,
Christmas
it's a
stuff,
whole
Kate.
exactly.
It's a cycle.
It's a cycle, a vicious cycle, a vicious cycle. Well, we have wrapped up the month of June. We did it. We made it through, and had a lot of fun. But of course, before we let you go, we gotta have you plug away where people can see you because you're on so much. I feel it could be one of these list of headlines like we've talked about so far. All the different appearances. Every time I open up X, all of a sudden I see all these like, it's this live show or something like that. So tell people where they can see you over at Fightful.
Well, annually, you can see me here reviewing a month of the year come
Yes.
December. But thank you for inviting me back. I love doing this, and I know how much work goes into isolating all these different nuances of what happens month to month. So thank you for putting together the series every year. But you can find me at my own YouTube channel at Miss Kate Faye, but I'm also on Fightful every Tuesday and Friday on the main channel at Fightful, and I'm behind our paywall on Fightful Select. I'll be back there on Mondays, as well as the Mark Order podcast on Wednesdays, where we talk all things All Elite. And yeah, Miss Kate Fabe on socials as well.
Very good. All right. We'll look forward to talking to you next year and best of luck and have a great year ahead. Hopefully Noam Dar appears at TDMK under your tree this year or in the year's future. But it's always great to talk to you and awesome time as always. Kate from Fightful, thanks so much.
Thank you, and thanks for the early invite to next year. I'm excited.
There you go. You made the list. You made the list, not a Chris Jericho way in a good way. Yeah.